Good evening. It's Thursday night. Parashat Vayigash. We're learning the Chazon Ish, Emuna uBitachon. The Chazon Ish has established that the term Emuna means that one understands that Hashem runs the world at every moment. Bitachon means that I connect to that concept even when it's difficult to connect to that concept. It's a time of danger, a time when it seems like Hashem is not the one that's going to decide the course. Even at that moment, I connect to the concept that Hashem could make any outcome happen. That's how the Chazon Ish defined Bitachon. Then the Chazon Ish said that the implementation of Emunah and Bitachon is living a lifestyle in accordance with Halacha, where I say the system I'm working with reflects my beliefs. It's not just an abstract concept, but rather it's an applied science. Emunah and Bitachon are applied in the way we behave. Do I feel like cheating on my taxes is what's going to accomplish my wealth? If my Emunah and Bitachon are sincere, so then that's reflected in my behavior and my adherence to Halacha. The Chazon Ish then went on and on, showing how it's not enough to have concepts, it's got to be an applied science. And he proved it over and over again from many sources that we always look at a person and we evaluate how much Torah, applied Torah. It's not just a question of the theoretical, the ethics, they're a part of it, but the essence of the applied sciences is in living in accordance with Halacha. And then the Chazon Ish went on to discuss the idea of how we develop our traits, and he said everything can be boiled down to one question. Am I focused on my desires, or do my values supersede my desires? That's the one question it all boils down to. The Chazon Ish went from there to say that's good in regards to man and his fellow man, but people think that between man and his creator, it's a different question. It's just the question of Yirat Shamayim. And people think you could have someone who's extraordinarily pious. They pray, they learn, they got a long white beard down to the floor, they must be very pious. But then they treat someone else not nicely. And they say, right, he's super holy, but he's not so great in treating other people. It's just, you know, in this area he's great, in that area he's not so great. Chazon Ish says that doesn't work that way. Chazon Ish says then all the other things he does is a habit. He can daven a long Shmoneh Esrei. It could take him 3 hours to daven Shmoneh Esrei, but if the way he treats his fellow man doesn't reflect that level of piety, so then what he's done is he's developed habits and he hasn't taken on his weaknesses. He hasn't developed his traits in the realm of man and his fellow man. And, says the Chazon Ish, when his awe of heaven comes in conflict with his weaknesses, for example, a person's very arrogant. So the Chazon Ish gave the example that he's going to have a crowd come to his house and someone very important is coming and he forgot to leave enough oil in the lamp for Friday night Shabbos. And he finds the lamp's about to turn off. And then everyone's going to show up and see his house is dark and he's going to be embarrassed. Will he stand up to that test or will he pour in more oil? Well, if he's arrogant in his relationship to his fellow man, then when his Yirat Shamayim comes in conflict with his arrogance, with his pride will win. The Chazon Ish says it's wrong to view them as completely disjointed realms. The realm of how we treat our fellow man is connected to the realm of our being a God-fearing person. We have to work on both of them. After all that, we're up to page 48, Memchet, the fourth chapter, the seventh paragraph. Achar shekavanu, after we've established kitikun amidot, that fixing one's traits, hen yesod amusad lemitzvot achukiyim velemitzvot amishpatim gam yachad, they are the prime foundation for the statutes, for the mitzvot of the mitzvot that we understand. All the mitzvot ultimately are resting on that foundation of self-development. Yetzeh lanu derech hashimush letikun amidot shemirat ha'alacha. So then the path, you want to know how what's the practical way to develop our traits? Well, observance of halacha. Observance of halacha is not just a question of how many Hanukkah lights do I light tonight? It's a question of how many do I light tonight if my neighbor doesn't have enough? It's a question of do I light? What happens if me and my friend are here and it's the seventh night and I have seven candles? So I could light seven candles and he will have none. But if I give him one, I'll only have six. Is it better to give him one? So he'll keep the mitzvah, but what about me? Okay. So, I'm saying, but the halacha, the applied science of halacha, is relevant to questions of between man and his fellow man, and as we study it, it develops our sensitivities. It develops our, one apiece, please, thank you. It develops our knowledge of how to treat the fellow man, because that's halacha. It's not just a question of ethics. Ki im omnam ha-mitzvot ha-masiyot b'tzivyonan ha-shitchi kefi matzavan ha-kayam b'shterot ha-amonim kalim em l'shomran v'lasotan. It's true that when you look at the applied Torah and you have a superficial glance of the Torah and you look at them the way the mass is, he says if you go down Main Street, the way people view mitzvot, they say, that's easy. I could light Hanukkah candles, right? The mitzvahs all seem so easy. Kvedim hem me'od le'ele ha'yodim chomer adin v'asher ahavat halacha kvua b'libam. Those who understand the gravity of transgressing a mitzvah or getting it wrong, they find that the mitzvahs carry a tremendous weight. It's not so simple. Ki eile harerim atluyim v'se'ara asher, we're on the top of page Memtet, the gravity, the question of what I'm going to do and not do, there's a metaphor that's used in the Mishnah and Chagiga. It's called a mountain hanging by a hair. So he's borrowing that term. He says, you want to know, is it kosher, is it not kosher? Is it permissible, is it not permissible? What am I supposed to do? So let's take a simple question. You board a bus, and you sit in traffic. You're sitting in traffic. You're supposed to have a free transfer to the train. Okay? Now, there was extraordinary traffic, and by the time you got off the bus, you're not sure if your transfer works or not. You board the train, and the doors close, and you go and you put your card by the reader, and the reader says your transfer has expired. Okay, but the doors have closed already, so you only had to travel one stop. You get off the next stop, and you never paid for that train. So you say to yourself, well, if there wouldn't have been a traffic jam, I would have had a transfer. Technically, I should have had a transfer. What do you have to do now? Simple question. You did pay. Under normal circumstances, your bus pass should have covered the train too. Okay, do I have to pay for the not normal circumstances? I'm just giving a small example that comes up. It's a, you know, simple question. Yes, no, maybe. What am I supposed to do now? If halacha matters to me, then it matters to me. Then it's a real question. And now you're going to say, there are a lot of questions. I'm saying there are questions that come up routinely in our lives. And that's what he's saying when the more we appreciate the importance of halacha, the more such a question has gravity, the more it's important to me. And I'm going to have to find out or pay. Now, the answer isn't always pay, but I should find out. V'asher rabotenu arechu lanu arba shulchanot. You know, our teachers prepared for us the tour in the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch is divided into four. So he calls it four tables, because it's the Shulchan is called the set table, right? Shulchan Aruch, the codex. So again, he's using metaphoric terms. V'sidru lefaneinu halachot lesivehem, and you look in Shulchan Aruch, and you see each chapter, each sentence, it's divided, it's arranged. Levkarim yamidu et shomer shulchanot eile, umkeim ha-mitzvah lepratev diktukea. You look closely, you see that there's an exact system here. It's not a question of what do I feel like doing. It's a system. I'm supposed to work with that system. You come to light Shabbos candles. You see that your candles are lit. There was a blackout. You lit candles. Now the lights turn back on. You have candles ready. What are you supposed to do now? Put out the candles and turn them on? Make a blessing? Friday afternoon. We had this numerous times last year. Blackout Friday afternoon. You light candles. Okay, now candle lighting time comes. And you need to light candles in honor of Shabbos. Can you make a blessing on those candles? Do you have to put them out and turn them back on? It's written in Shulchan Aruch, the answer to that question. But that's what he's saying. There's a system. You think it's not... there's a real system. You know, we had a big question that came up when we set up the shul. Sounds unimportant, but you got to decide what you're going to do. Where does the chazan stand? We know you have in the front, the Aron HaKodesh with the Sifrei Torah. You have in the center, the Bima, where you read from the Torah. Where does the chazan stand? So Sfaradim have him standing in the center. But Ashkenazim have him standing somewhere in shul, towards the front. Where? So some Ashkenazi shuls have him in the front right, next to the Aron HaKodesh. Other Ashkenazi shuls have him not right of the Aron HaKodesh, but in front of the Aron HaKodesh. Which way is it supposed to go? So again, there's a system and there's a logic, and you have to study and figure it out. Now, you could say, what difference does it make? It makes a difference. There's a logic behind each minhag. Which one is right for an Ashkenazi shul? You know, someone came to me with tefillin, poor guy. I got a phone call last week. The guy tells me he did his giyur 6-7 years ago, and he's been wearing these pair of tefillin that the rabbi who helped him do his giyur acquired for him. He knew it was cheap. He couldn't afford an expensive pair, but he told his rabbi, I want real kosher. Like, I'm going to wear this. It shouldn't be like bidyevet kosher. It should be a good pair, as best as possible for the price he could afford. He took it to a scribe. The scribe happens to be a friend of mine, and the scribe tells him, your tefillin are apostle. They were never kosher. So he comes to my house, and he's a bit shattered. It's been 6-7 years now that he's been wearing these tefillin. And I call my friend, the scribe, and I said, where is it pasul? What's the issue? And he tells me the places. I look at it, and I said to the guy who brought the tefillin, I said, my friend, the scribe, is a disciple of Rav Mordechai Eliyahu. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu holds that this form of a shin is pasul. But you know what? Rav Moshe Feinstein holds it's mutter lechatchila, that it's kosher. And you're not a Sfardi. You're not bound by Rav Eliyahu's opinion. You're an Ashkenazi. With all due respect to my friend, the scribe, your tefillin are kosher. I would make a blessing on them. I respect Rav Mordechai Eliyahu. He's not your rabbi. You're an Ashkenazi. You go by Rav Feinstein. And I said, just to keep you calm, I'm going to send you to another friend of mine, another scribe, who's broader than the guy you went to, who knows all the different shitot, and you go to him and ask him. And that night he went, and that scribe told him. But you know, this question that he brought me, 18 years ago, I posed the question to Rabbi Feinstein's son. That shape of a shin. 18 years ago, and I never had to answer that question. It was the first time that someone ever asked me that question, that type of shin. First time that question ever came up. And but I know from 18 years ago that I asked Rabbi Feinstein's son, what's the halacha on that type of shin? The halacha involves details. And the details are part of our tradition. And when you learn, you start having an appreciation. And that system teaches us how to function. Yes? Can we discuss that? Will you be here next class? Yeah. So let's do that in the Q&A. That's a very good question.
What's taken into consideration?
What? No, that's a great question. What would be if he discovers his tefillin are not kosher? So that I want to give a broad answer to that. So let's discuss it next class. Lifnei nisyonot kabirim. And when a person observes the mitzvot, sometimes there are huge challenges to observe a mitzvah. Sometimes it's not easy. And that's why the Chazon Ish says, when we perfect ourselves, part of developing ourselves is our ability to perform mitzvot. People think, I'll open a Mesilat Yesharim or Chot Tzadikim, I'll open one of the books on ethics. Chazon Ish says, you know, just doing the mitzvot right, that develops a person too. It's not easy. We discussed, I don't know if any of you were there, we discussed earlier this week, what Yosef did in Egypt is mind-boggling. Yosef comes to the Egyptians and tells them, you guys want food? You're all going to have to undergo an operation. Circumcision. You don't like it? No food. Think about what that means for a minute. New young king, and no one can eat next to him because he's one of those Hebrews that eats their gods. And he's telling them, you want food? You have to circumcise. Well, how did Yosef have the courage to say such a thing? Couldn't that have brought on a mass rebellion? I mean, the people are saying, this is crazy. And it's not just any people. This is Egypt, where the people are as promiscuous as it gets. The people are thinking all the time, all they're interested in is promiscuity. It's the most corrupt society in terms of promiscuity. And he tells them, guys, you want food, you have to circumcise. How did he do that? How did he have the courage to do that? So we discussed earlier this week that it could be that the reason Yosef was able to do that was because he stood up to the test with Potiphar's wife. When Potiphar's wife came to him and said, there's no one here. My husband's a eunuch. And all I'm asking you is come to bed with me. We won't be intimate. Let's just lie down together. Yosef, you're a young man. You're normal. You want it as much as I do. Come. And Yosef says, no, there is God in this room. I'm not doing that. You say there's no one at home, but God is here. I'm not doing that. And day after day after day, he refuses. And finally, when there's really no one around, she grabs him and he runs and he's left without clothing. And he stands up to that challenge. Well, at that moment, Yosef acquired in his personality a certain strength. When a person in his personal life stands up to a mitzvah in a way that demands of him a lot, as was the case by Yosef, that person walks away a different person. Now Yosef, when he comes, why can't we fight evil? Because we're not so convinced. If we would try to tell someone else, you should do this, you should be that, somewhere deep down inside, we know, I'm not perfect. So how forceful can I be when I make demands, when I make claims? Yosef had the might to stand up against the whole Egyptian people and say, you want food? You circumcise. You take control of your lust. How could he do that? Because he took control of himself. Because in the most trying moment, when he had tremendous desire, he took control. And because he had that control, and he did not fall, so now he had that personality that could stand up to the whole Egyptian people and say, I'm not giving you food unless you guys start taking control of yourself. So the Chazon Ish says, self-development is not only about learning how to develop our character. Self-development is also developing our adherence to mitzvot in their details, and when it's difficult too. Sometimes you have to stand up, says the Chazon Ish, to awesome challenges. Sometimes a person has to work really hard to find kosher tefillin. Today it's easy. But I bought my kids, one of the kids wasn't interested in tzitzis. Okay, so we had a kid who, we tried to convince him to wear tzitzis, you're going to be a big boy, you're going to get tzitzis, and he's looking at us and saying, I don't want. So what we did was, we went and we bought this very expensive book on how you make tzitzit. And the book actually shows you the threads, it shows you the yarn. Mamash hands on, you see everything in the book. You see how from the sheep all the way through making it into tzitzit. It's a very expensive book. It's like 70, 80 shekel for this kid's book. And there are stories with each stage. With each stage, they tell a very educational story to the child about the tzitzit. And we told the child, we let go of the concept of tzitzit for a few weeks. And then one Shabbos, we showed him on the highest shelf where no kid could touch the book. Because it is an expensive book. We told them, we bought a book just for you. We're going to learn about tzitzit. And every Shabbos, we would read another section and let him see that component, you know, hands-on, and learn the stories and read about tzitzit. And by the time we finished the book, he wanted his tzitzit. It worked. Not every educational idea works. You know, this one did. So one of the stories they quote there was about a man in, I don't remember if it was Austria or Australia, sorry, who wanted tzitzit during World War II. And they tell the story there about how it took him about a year and a half till he was able to get his own tzitzit. So you read the story about the pains he had to go to get wool and to learn how to make the wool into string and how he could finally create his own tzitzit. You have an appreciation. Sometimes it wasn't so easy. You know, the rabbi's job from this time of year, from Hanukkah on, was to figure out how am I going to have an esrog for next year. In Europe, it wasn't an easy feat. They'd start working out systems from now. They'd be working on next year's esrog. The Chafetz Chaim writes that there was a year that they used last year's esrog in his town. They couldn't get an esrog. By the Chafetz Chaim, they used last year's esrog. They didn't have. Okay, so that involves work. Tzitzit kilchatan, getting kosher tzitzis. You know, we make a big deal about tying our tzitzit. I once saw one of my teachers tying his tzitzit, and I said, why are you doing that? You can buy him ready-made. He said, it's my mitzvah. Why should I let someone else do it? So I said, because I got better things to do with my time. And it took me years to appreciate what he was doing. You made your own tzitzit. You know, you're wearing tzitzit that you made. It's your tzitzit. So, yeah, you invest in a mitzvah, you become a different person. Sometimes you suddenly have a question and you ask yourself, did I do it right? Maybe everything I did was wrong. Wait a second, I made tzitzis at night. Am I allowed to make tzitzit at night? Yes, you're allowed to. But suddenly you have a question. You have a question. So you're wondering, were my tzitzit kosher, what I've been wearing all this time? The truth is, it's kosher. And sometimes a person has to fight his own traits, and sometimes it's the trait of being lazy. Sometimes a person's very tired. And sometimes it's embarrassing. I'm going to ask this question. Aren't I going to seem stupid? Guys, the smarter you get, the more this Yetzer Hara is potent. The more you learn, the more you have a temptation not to ask because you're going to sound stupid. I keep forcing myself to ask. Where does it say that? What's the source of that? I shouldn't. Okay, I don't know. What can I do? I don't know. I told you what the... In Panovich, you had to get smicha. What do you have to do? 500 times say the sentence, I don't know, right? You have to be able to say that if you really want to learn. And just because you got smicha, so you got rabbinic ordination, you don't know everything. There's always more to know. Ah, but sometimes it's embarrassing to ask. I'll tell you an embarrassing story about me. Usually you're not supposed to embarrass yourself, but I'm hoping you'll learn from this the importance of asking. We were married, a year or two. And in the halacha it says that we know when a couple is prohibited, so they're not allowed to touch. Okay, that's clear. Everyone knows that. Fine. But then there are times in the month where the couple is permitted, but you have to anticipate that maybe the onset will come. You don't know. That's what's called in halacha, prisha samuch leveset. So ordinarily you have a period where the couple is prohibited, so then they don't touch, they separate beds. Everyone knows that, fine. Then you have the time the couple is permitted, so they could do everything. Then during the month, let's say the average person has a period every 30 days, every 29 and a half days, 29 days. So when there are dates when you say it's likely the period's going to come, and at that time, a couple has a limiting factor. They're not supposed to be intimate that day. Wait a day, right? And the halacha also recommends that they should abstain from chibuk v'nishuk. What does chibuk v'nishuk mean? From hugging and kissing. Okay? That's what the halacha recommends. So I learned that, and I thought that means hugging and kissing. That's what the words mean, chibuk v'nishuk. I spoke to one of my rabbeim after I was married for a year or two, and he said to me, it means any touch of affection. I said, who says? He said, believe me, that's what it means. I said, but it says chibuk v'nishuk. What it says is what's prohibited is hugging and kissing. It doesn't say every touch of affection. He said, you'll learn, you'll know. And at the time, I didn't believe him. I went to his Rebbe. And he was very nice. He didn't laugh in my face. Meaning today, I understand how silly the question was. But back then, I read it, and I read it to be literal. So I'm telling you this because in the laws of family purity is one area where most people have no clue. And people make mistakes like this. You think you got it, and then you say, wait. Okay, don't be embarrassed to ask. That's what he's saying here. And then when you're not embarrassed, you've developed another trait in yourself. You've developed that trait of how important it is to do what's right. You've developed the trait of Da Bai Shan Lamed. You've developed the trait of not being lazy. Ufamim, they've said mamon. And sometimes it's going to cost you money. If I wasn't supposed to do that, that's going to cost me money. Upamim anche betoyek mitu. And sometimes people in his family are going to get upset at him. You come home and say, you know, I just heard that even the lettuce that comes pre-checked has to be washed. You have to rinse it with soap water. So your wife's going to say, what do you mean you just heard? What am I paying all this money for pre-washed lettuce, for bug-free lettuce? You're going to say, I'm sorry, but I heard even the rabbinate. It's not a stringency. I heard even the rabbinate says that on the most basic level of kashrut, you have to clean it off. It's not enough that it's called bug-free. You have to wash it off. Your wife might give you a hard time. She might say, no more lettuce, honey, forget it. You might find yourself lettuce-free for 3 months, right? Sometimes the people in your family are going to give you a hard time. Imagine you were there when 3 years ago they started saying that the women's wigs might have been used for idol worship, right? So you come home and you say, honey, I just learned we got to burn your wig. And your wife says, that's $4,000 times five. That's $20,000. I wanted to go on vacation. But wait a second. So I'm supposed to go without a head covering? And you say, no, a bandana is just fine. And she says, if you wear a bandana, I'll wear a bandana. Right? What do you say? Your wife's not going to give you such an easy time. Sometimes, for saying what's right, you're going to get over the head. And he says, there are thousands of examples of difficulties that you will naturally encounter when you try to do what's right in halacha. He says, bottom line, anyone who really tries to be careful is going to find himself alone. He's going to quickly discover that people around him are not so concerned. And so he has to have the audacity. He has to have the courage to say, I'm going to do what's right and I'm not going to be drawn down. We once had, one of our kids had a Rebbe who was really problematic. This teacher used to embarrass kids publicly. He used to call them names. He used to curse them. And when we understood this, so we tried speaking to the principal that there's a problem here. And we realized the principal wasn't going to listen if more kids didn't get together. So we got another two or three parents whose children also were suffering to come with us to the principal a second time. And after the third meeting, the principal agreed that the Rebbe has to be removed. So great, what did they do? They switched classes. They took the Rebbe that was problematic, they gave him to another class. They took the Rebbe from the other class, they gave him to our son's class. So I turned to the other parents and I said, now what are we going to do? And they said, nothing. I said, what do you mean nothing? We know now that the kids in the other class are suffering. What are we going to do? Wait till those parents find out? We know there's a problem. The principal wanted a cop-out solution, right? And they said, kol hakavod, our kids are fine. We're not in this fight. Suddenly I found myself standing alone. So what's going on here? That's where this chazanish comes in. Sometimes you see that other people are not so interested in what's right and wrong. Like one parent said to me, it's nice that it interests you. And I didn't think that was the right terminology. He's like looking at me like I'm being a tzaddik. I said, what do you mean it's nice and interests me? How could you sleep at night? You know the other kids are suffering. What does that mean? Chazanish says you have to be willing to stand it alone sometimes. Because you'll discover it's a lonely world because not everyone is willing to work with the principal and say, I'm really interested in what's right. That says the Chazon Ish will put you on a lone side, like Avraham Avinu was alone. We'd like to think it isn't that way, but the Chazon Ish says be prepared. And so the Chazon Ish says, adherence to halacha develops within us so many traits that are critical. It's not just about learning ethics. Learning and adhering to halacha is also a system that develops our traits.